And Alan, you knew
Love
that.
Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Alan Levy Show at blogtalkradio.com. Be prepared to call in now and chat with Alan and his very special guest right here at blogtalkradio.com. With no more further ado, please welcome your host, Mr. Alan Levy.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's a beautiful day here in the fine state of New Jersey, and we have a very interesting show to this afternoon, and my guest today will be Eric Mattson from ericmattson.com and Nora Gannon Barnes, a PhD. She's with UMass at Dartmouth, the Center for Marketing Research, and we're going to talk about social media and how social media has is invading the Inc. 500. So that's going to be a very interesting topic, and I want to thank you for joining me today. Of course, you're on Blog Talk Radio here now listening to the live stream at blogtalkradio.com. The archive of this show can be found in many places, including blogtalkradio.com/Alan Levy, and can be subscribed onto iTunes or any other RSS feeder. So thank you for joining me. If you'd like to call into the live show today, we will take calls later on. We'll see if anyone is calling on the live show, and that number is 347-677-0649. That's 347-677-0649. And we'll see if we can take a couple of calls later on during the show. Okay, so anyway, thank you for joining me. And what I'd like to do is welcome our guests, and Eric and Nora, how are you today?
Fantastic. Thanks for inviting us.
Sure, it's my pleasure.
Well.
Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
So let's talk a little about your background and what the social media invades the Inc. 500 document and research piece is about, because I found it to be very fascinating, and that's one of the reasons I sought you out. I want to introduce you to both to Blog Talk Radio, which is a social radio network, and just some of your findings I thought were quite interesting. So why don't we get started getting right into it, maybe describing your background and what your conclusions were here.
Well, this study was Eric's idea, so I think maybe we'll start off, we'll let him kick it off, because he got the idea that this might be a real interesting group to take a look at.
Excellent.
So the concept behind this was to really answer the fundamental question of, are businesses using social media? Because there has been an enormous amount of hype over the last few years as blogs have come into use, podcasts, social networking with MySpace, but a lot of those are very consumer-focused applications, and as a force in the market in terms of just growth of a technology, when businesses start to use it, some really cool things happened. So we wanted to go out and look at whether businesses were using it, but we wanted to do it in a way that we might be able to get a strong sample, because a lot of the research in social media prior to our study had been very anecdotal. People went out and they got 5 or 7 corporate bloggers, or they called up all their friends and they said, oh, is your business using this? And so we wanted to choose a sample that gave us a strong statistical foundation to actually say some things about, is business using social media? And we chose the Inc. 500, which is this group from the Inc. magazine names the 500 fastest growing private companies in the United States. And we went out and we surveyed all of them, and about a quarter of them participated and answered a bunch of questions about social media for us. And that's where the study that you saw came from.
Right, and I see from the kind of the headlinings here is that your research proves conclusively that social media is coming to the business world at a faster rate than many had anticipated.
Right, and that's because the research that we did have or was available came from some of the wikis online, like SocialText has, where they were tracking Fortune 500 companies. And most of the available literature was saying that 8% or 9% of the Fortune 500 currently have a public-facing blog. And that's that's kind of a low number. We at least thought that maybe there was more going on. Maybe there was something that we weren't seeing. So when we did the study of the Inc. 500, we knew that the Fortune 500 were blogging at a rate of 8 or 9%. So when we saw our figure, which was 19%, we were just really kind of jumping up and down, going, wow, there really is a lot going on. And these small, private, fast-growing companies were really embracing social media.
Right, that you indicate here that over one quarter, right, of the Inc. 500 studied report social media is very important to their business and marketing strategy.
Mm. We think that the Inc. 500 was a neat sample, not only because we were able to get almost a quarter of them to answer our questions, which would be very hard at a Fortune 500 level just because of the complexity of their businesses, but also because it's this sample of innovative companies that are really leading their industry, that are growing tremendously fast, and really give us a glimpse of what are the companies, the corporate leaders of tomorrow doing today.
Now, can you explain what social media is? What does it mean? I see it all the time, but what does it mean? And a lot of our audience, you know, who are involved in, you know, they're lawyers and many are bloggers, but they're people, they're mom. I mean, we have all kinds of people on Blog Talk Radio, but what does social media mean?
Alan, that's a perfect question, and Eric from the beginning really knew that we had to handle that in a way that made sense for this research. And so what we had to do was we had to find a definition for it and use it. So, Eric, why don't you tell them how you went about doing that?
The interesting thing is we actually went out and we looked at a social media source, Wikipedia, which I imagine most of your audience has at least heard of. Which
yeah.
is an online encyclopedia that's based on a wiki. It's community editable, and it is a form of social media. No one sat down at the beginning of you know the change of technology and said, oh, social media is going to be X, and drew a very definitive box around it. It's a bit of a gray subject. So we actually went out to Wikipedia and used some community accepted definitions online of what social media is, which is generally looked at as a set of technologies / activities online where people participate and sort of contribute. You know, the whole community contributes to the production of something. It's also commonly used for a set of technologies that lowers the barrier to entry, the most common being things like social networking, MySpace, LinkedIn being two examples there, wikis with Wikipedia, blogs, there's any number of companies out there with blogs, podcasts.
Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk mm-hmm. Radio is a great example.
Yeah.
You know, social message boards are actually a wonderful example of social media, though they're not very often included in the common list. And so we then used Wikipedia to define those technologies so that when we went out and we talked to the people that we surveyed, we would have some common definitions that if they said, what is social networking, we could talk to them about, well, here's how we're defining it. You know, do you use this?
Alan, I'm sorry, Eric. What was interesting is that Eric actually created a social media primer for the researchers and the interviewers so that everybody was given standard explanations. So if someone did say, well, what do you mean by social networking, all of our research team, who were students at UMass Dartmouth, had the same explanation to give back and the same examples, which kept our research clean. So I thought that was really important.
Yeah, and I see you've cited blogging, podcasting, online video, social networking, wikis as prominent forms of social media.
Yeah. I mean, we struggled to pick our list a little bit. There were a few. We looked at tagging and discarded it. Since then, I've maybe wanted to reconsider that decision after having a few conversations with people, but we had to start somewhere. So we picked what we thought were the most common and went forward with that, figuring that it would give us at least a good snapshot beginning snapshot of where business is at in terms of using a broad spectrum of social media rather than just a focus, are they using blogs type question.
Right. Now, one of the things that was interesting to me, particularly given the fact that we're in the pod, Blog Talk Radio is really a social radio network, and we have this live format, and we're having conversations, and this is live and uncensored and unedited, and other people can participate in this conversation. So we don't consider ourselves podcasters, but these conversations are archived, and therefore they become podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it interesting with when you've got this graph here, and it says, how familiar are you with the following types of social media? And podcasting ranked as 30%. Social networking was first at 42%, message boards 38%, blogging 36%, online video 31%, podcasting 30%, and wikis 16%. I would think wikis, you know, could be 10%. I mean, a lot of people don't get wikis. It's part of the name. You know, people don't get it. But you've got a 30% familiarity rate with podcasting, but only an 11% adoption rate. So one of the questions that I had here for you was, why do you think that is?
I think there are some, and we were talking a little bit about this before the show started, I think there are some mental challenges that people need to get over about podcasting, both from the creation of content and then the consumption of content. And I think that Blog Talk Radio is definitely a step in the right direction because of its simplicity, and it's not only your model but the technology piece of it. I think it's also important to remember that as neat and as enthusiastic as the podcasting community is, you can go back and you can draw parallels to how many people did you know who used to listen to books on tape and consumed audio media in that form. And I think that it wasn't a dominant percentage of the population. And so I think that you're facing just some cultural habits as well that you don't necessarily they know what a podcast is, they've got an iPod, but they either consume music and love music or and just maybe don't see podcasts or understand the value there for them.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nora.
No, I was just going to say, I also don't think that there's as much information traveling around in at least the common business environment about podcasting. I think there are books about corporate blogging. There's even a Blogging for Dummies. I mean, we talk about the other things, and most businesses have had some form of message boards or bulletin boards. These things are just far more common to them. The whole podcasting idea, and as a marketer, I would just say that we haven't, and I don't know that we want to, but we haven't done as good a job of marketing podcasts. I don't think people understand what's available in audio files, what can be downloaded, how you do that, where you go. I think the understanding is lagging far behind, and I think that's really a consumer education issue, and I think it's a marketing issue for those of us who want to maybe expand that market.
Well, I agree. And we started going over a lot of these issues at Blog Talk Radio when we created a company, which we launched in September. We've produced about 12,000 broadcasts since then, live, and then now, of course, 12,000 podcasts. But what I had found with podcasting was that unlike blogs, which are very open and free and easy and viral in nature, podcasting traditionally is not. It's complicated. It's expensive. There's no common platform. You know, with blogging, you've got Blogger, you've got WordPress,
mm-hmm.
iPad, and with podcasting, you just don't have common platforms. So you've got no common platform. You have you've got some big hurdles to overcome. And then there's another issue, which is in terms of searchability, you know, metadata.
Mm-hmm.
I had a conversation with Tony Conrad, who's the CEO of Sphere, and he's talking about the lack of metadata on podcasts. Like, there's a lot of tremendous information that's coming out that's being communicated via podcast, but it's just not there's no metadata. It's not searchable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be an issue that will help it because, I mean, that not just the point on podcasting, but as I compared those adoption rates with the familiarity rate, that was the largest discrepancy between, you know, your two charts on your report.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right. So there's discovery is certainly a critical issue. You need to be able to find the podcasts you want to listen to and the quality podcasts you want to listen to. And I don't think that challenge has really been addressed yet. And it will hopefully. I know there are some other, maybe Sphere or Podzinger, and there's a few other companies trying to do some smart, real smart audio search out there. You know, I think that there's another piece of just, you know, signal-to-noise ratio and podcasts, because, you know, some people get on and feel that they need to do it like it's radio and have their personality, and some people like that, and some people are so busy that they want, you know, more concise, condensed information, and so that's a challenge sometimes, because you can't, it's harder to skip through the first 5 minutes of a podcast. You just are more, you have a greater tendency to jump forward. And we're getting a little off the grand subject of our study, but, and the other piece I think is just from a viral nature. The blogs are phenomenal because someone reads a post, writes their response, and links back to it. Most people don't consume podcasts necessarily in front of their computer, and even if they are, it's not easily, you know, to grab, oh, that's a great comment at, you know, minute 5:37,
right,
and stick that into their blog and then post a response and link to it and other people discover it. It lacks that certain viral nature because of how they're consumed right now.
Right, okay. So let's carry on. So what are the other key findings that you had uncovered with your research project?
Nora, you want to take this one?
Oh, hold on, she must have dropped off. Hi, Nora? Nora?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, something must have occurred. The question I had was, what are some of the other large findings that you've uncovered here?
Well, some of the things that I found really interesting that Eric and I pursued in other publications was the number of companies that were actually monitoring social media. So while it was really important to us to look at who was using social media, it was kind of interesting to see that regardless of whether or not they actually had a blog or a network or a podcast, they were listening, and they were actually monitoring social media. They were watching what their competitors were doing. They were monitoring the blogosphere for comments about themselves, and we found that to be really interesting, and maybe that's the first step in, which is kind of interesting. Maybe they're looking at how other people are using their social media, how blogs are being implemented by other businesses, how the conversations are being handled online, and maybe that's how they're getting kind of the first step. At least it looks like there's quite a bit of activity on the monitoring side.
Okay.
And another thing I found sort of interesting was to think about this more from a applied stage. Because we love the academic viewpoint of you know, blogs are being adopted, companies think they're very important. If you look at the numbers, a large proportion consider them very important or important to their you know, their marketing business strategy. But where do you start? And Nora brings up this great point of maybe you start with just listening to what the conversation is out there and watching other people. But you also certainly start with people who are more familiar with blogs are more likely to want to use them. So there's just this education that needs to happen. And there's all sorts of ways to do it, whether it's monitoring competitors and saying, hey, look at our competitor's blog and they did X, and educating your group is just a wonderful place to start from an applied standpoint of the research that we did.
You know, Alan, what I found, of course, I'm the outsider here. You guys are experts, and you have podcast sites, you have blog sites. And what happened with Eric and I is I had done a study myself, and because I had so many businesses coming to me, because I run a business center, we get a lot of businesses coming in for advice, and they were saying, should I have a blog? Should I have a blog? And I didn't know the answer to that. So my first study was called Advice from Experienced Bloggers, and I went out and did one of those studies where I try to get people to talk to me about whether or not having a blogging site makes sense for a business. How do you measure return on investment? How do you measure its success? How long have you had it? What are you going to do to change it? And that study ended up being one of the first studies that came out of an academic environment on business blogging. Eric had a podcast site, and Eric was in Sweden at the time and called me. And me, like everyone else who's not thoroughly involved, as you two are, was taken by that. I said, oh, my God, I'm going to be on a podcast. I'm not even sure what that is. And Eric and I had a long conversation, and Eric told me that he had lots of things he would like to research and, you know, would we consider teaming up. And since then, Eric and I have done several studies. We've been even in Business Week. Business Week has picked up some of our work just 4 or 5 weeks ago. So there's a great
That's where I found this this piece.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's how I got in touch with you.
Well, that's fantastic. So what's happened with Eric and I is we have this perfect combination, I think, of someone who's really a technical expert who's immersed in the social media world and someone like me who is on kind of the outside advising businesses at a university specializing in research. And so what we've done is we've brought our talents together, and hopefully what we can do is provide some of the high-quality research that actually uses statistically valid samples that tries to assess what's going on in social media in a way that people can now use it, depend on it, and use it as they try to move their social media forward.
Right. Well, it's, you know, fascinating. I started, have you read Naked Conversations by Shel Israel?
First thing I did.
So the first thing that I did when I created Blog Talk Radio a year ago, last May, when my dad was ill with lymphoma, and I created a blog for him. I'd never been on a blog in my life. I had not seen one. I, of course, read about blogs, but I had never heard of Technorati. So I said, I created a blog on Blogger. I went over with my dad. I said, here's this thing, this great tool, and our family and friends can see how you're doing with this illness. And, you know, it was a difficult situation for him at the time, but he loved it. Anyway, the first thing that I did was look at Technorati. Someone told me about it. 50 million blogs. And I just was amazed at the size of the community and the viral nature of it. And then as I started reading about it, the first book that I read was Shel Israel's book, Robert Scoble on A Naked Conversation, which is really right up your alley with in terms of business adoption of blogging.
I think, you know, we can actually talk a little bit about the first study that Nora and I did together was looking at whether blogging is about the technology or whether it's about the attitude, because you'll find that if you talk to a lot of bloggers, they're very transparent people, or they try and be, and they don't. Spin is looked on negatively, and at least there's certainly a community that doesn't like it, and they all want to be honest and open, and these are wonderful principles. But the question was, you know, so you're a business, and you're starting to blog. I mean, what really matters? Is it the technology, or is it the attitude? And almost overwhelmingly, the message came back from a bunch of people that we surveyed was, you know, how you act, the openness, the honesty, the clear communication is really far more important than a blog. You know, the blog is just a channel that is, some people like RSS, and it's a channel that people have come to associate with those things. But if you're a business person, it's great to have a blog, but if you're not open and honest and transparent and caring and these other things that people associate with the human voice of many bloggers, then you're not going to get nearly the full value out of it. So, I mean, that was our first study, and that was really the message we got from there. And so your example is great. It's very much an illustration of how most blogs are used, and it's an important aspect that most people think needs to be carried over into business blogs. You can't business blog and just assume it's another channel for your press releases.
I think actually one step beyond that, when I go out and talk to businesses, I think doing a blog badly, and I think you can do a blog badly, I think it's detrimental. I really do think that if you have a blog and you censor the comments, if you are not open to criticism, if you lash out at people who have something to say that doesn't agree with what your perspective is, I think it's very detrimental, because I think then what you've done is you've positioned this company not as open and transparent and authentic, but as hostile. And I think it can be really, you know, I was talking to some business last week, and I said, if I were a pet food manufacturer, I'd have a blog up in a minute, regardless of whether or not you were involved in the product scandals and the problems that they had with the pet food. I'd have a blog up just to be able to tell pet owners, you know, what they might do, what they might avoid, give them some advice, talk to all these anxious and upset people, and give them a human voice, a place to go for information, someone to talk to about their concerns. I think a blog can really be that hand that comes out of a big building and holds hands with what is the human community. But I think, you know, just as easily, it can become something very different.
Well, Jonathan Schwartz, right, from Sun Microsystems, is, you know, is one of the most noted bloggers, and had a lot to do with creating a much better image for Sun. And then, of course, you've got Microsoft on the other side, where Scoble started blogging. And, you know, but it's interesting where Apple stands. I mean, Apple's got just a terrific persona. I mean, their view in the marketplace, they're just a great company, but they don't have blogs internally,
no.
I don't think, right?
No,
they're very
no.
secretive.
Yeah. No, they don't. And it's interesting. But they have a culture that allows them to get away with that. I mean, I really do think that they're one of those brands, like Volkswagen, that just enjoys this incredible loyalty and can get away with making that kind of decision. But then you look at something like Walmart, and, I mean, Edelman couldn't save them. You know, you get the best public relations firm in the world, and their blog was a disaster.
I think, Alan, that you'll never find Nora and I jumping up and down saying everyone has to have a blog.
Yeah, never.
It certainly fits a lot of companies, and it can be a great thing. But it's more about substance than flash is what it ultimately comes down to, and most business comes down to, and most marketing comes down to. People are pretty savvy about, and especially when you've got 50 million of them watching you, are pretty savvy about calling your bluff. So you've got to be really open and honest when you want to go out and do it. You know, another great example is actually, since you brought up Edelman and Walmart, is Richard Edelman and the sort of the Edelman team he's got there, many of which are very high level. He himself blogs, and he's really added a human voice to, we did Walmart and we screwed up, and he wrote about that. And I think that adds a lot of credibility to and accountability, not only outside of his company, but within his company. And he you know, Edelman is pushing the boundaries when it comes to PR and social media, and I applaud them for that. But, you know, they're inherently going to step in a few holes and make a few enemies, because they're trying a bunch of new things, which in the long run will benefit them, but right now makes them look bad occasionally.
Yeah, and well, they've made a series of blunders, I think, and there's the perception of conflict is a little rough. I mean, Steve Rubell is out there, and you know, as if, I guess they do have full disclosure, but what are they promoting some of their clients? And it's a challenge. I mean, they definitely, you know, we're all pioneers here to a certain degree.
Yeah, that's really, you know what, that really captures this whole thing. And you know, when businesses come to me and say, what should we do, I feel very much like that. I feel like nobody really has all the answers now. All of us are kind of putting one foot in front of the other and in large part testing the waters. And I think what Eric and I continue to do, and we're having a great time, is we continue to look at a new audience, a new venue. We went on from the Inc. 500 to look at colleges and universities in the United States, and to see whether or not they were using blogs in their business of attracting students. After that, we went on to look at not-for-profits to see if they were trying to enhance their position in the marketplace through the
use of... We have a call. Would you mind taking a call?
No, we'd love to.
Great.
Right, Eric?
Okay. Hi, 415, you're on Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks, Alan. My name is Lisa. I have a question for Eric and Nora. My question is, do you think social media community services are doing a good job at placing filters and security in place to wane out the worries of corporations and other organizations who want to protect information coming in or going out? And if so, what are some of the best examples of this that you're aware of?
Hi, Lisa. I would say that at the forefront of people who are looking at what you're talking about are the bigger companies. They have dedicated legal staffs, Sun, HP, Microsoft. I believe you can find all of their corporate blogging policies online from a perspective of trying to how they look at restricting information flowing in and out. I think that a general good policy is if you wouldn't call up your competitor and tell them what you want, what you're putting on your blog, then you probably shouldn't put it on your blog. I think that general guidelines like that are good and safe and easy to understand for most employees. So I'd probably start there. But I've run across very few examples of corporations that have put something up on their blog and then been run out of business because their competitor took that information and ran with it.
Yeah.
So I'd say the filters are decent, probably.
And also, Debbie Wheel's book, Corporate Blogging, has an entire appendix with sample policies in it. It's really like, you know, really wonderful. It has some kinds of fill-in-the-blank things that you can just tailor to what you need. And IBM as well has a very detailed on their website their policies. So people, one of the things that I recognized very early on is that people are very willing to share information. Bloggers especially are extremely willing to tell you what they use, how they use it, to share their policies. But I have to say, in the research that we've done, most people say that they don't have a very restrictive policy, that for the most part they feel like over-editing is a bad thing and they feel like over-censoring is a bad thing. So I think there's a fine line to walk for a business.
Do you think that more and more of the employees, you think employees feel that they, unencumbered, in other words, where they can go on and blog about problems they see or problems with products they hear from customers calling in? I would think employees would be hesitant to do that, you know, where there would be further repercussion by the executives that don't really fully understand the power of the blog and this open dialogue.
Clearly there have been examples of that, and there will continue to be examples of that on a case-by-case basis at even the most open, social media-aware companies that exist. It's just the inherent nature of the medium. I would say, though, that the smart companies are realizing that personal connections are incredibly powerful and turning themselves inside out a little bit. And this applies, it depends often a lot on the type of company, but Microsoft's ability to have 2,000 bloggers or 10,000 bloggers, I don't know what their number is at currently, out there participating in the community and hopefully adding value and building relationships and dealing with problems and improving their brand merely by being ambassadors is incredibly powerful. And, I mean, to try and buy that goodwill through advertising of any kind or PR or direct mail or whatever you want would be terribly difficult, but to just channel your employees' enthusiasm and passion towards the communities that they serve is one of the I don't know, nirvanas of social media someday.
Yeah. Well, and it is how Robert Scoble returned credibility, I think, to the company. I mean, he certainly wasn't a flag waver. He certainly didn't think everything that they did was wonderful. He was critical. He was honest. And I think that that really made Microsoft look like a human company, the fact that he was allowed to say and do the things that he did. Now, I don't think that the average employee would get away with that, but I do think that there's some honesty and credibility that comes along with allowing your employees to say, yeah, you know, that last laptop, you know, might have been bigger than we wanted it to be, or, you know, that maybe we should shoot for something, you know, more compact in the future. And IBM tells us that, you know, they just use general hiring policies. When everyone's hired, they have an employee agreement that says in the employee agreement what you can and cannot do in terms of talking openly about the company or its products. And they said they've translated that right into their blogging policy.
So do they limit people from what they say? Obviously, for disclose, you know, for
yes, they are limited in what they
property rights. You can't
exactly, except, but that's also. I mean, forget about the blogging. They signed that agreement as an employee. So I went to one conference where on the panel their blogging team spoke, and they said that that's what they did, is they took the contract that the IBM employees actually signed, which says you're not allowed to talk about new product development, and it's very specific, and those same rules, they took that and they actually incorporated into their blogging policy. And they said that their blogging policy is not really very different from their employee hiring policy.
Right. Interesting.
I think that one of these challenges that then comes up is, if you're a blogger and you work in an environment and you want to blog related to, you know, what you do, well, what do you talk about? And one of the best sources I've run across is a book called Beyond Buzz by a woman named Lois Kelly, who I interviewed on my podcast, and people can go listen to it at generousofthej.com if they want. But if not, they should search for Beyond Buzz. She wrote a wonderful book that I'm working my way through right now that talks about some common themes that you can use for ideas for writing on your blog. Not a top 100 list of any kind, but more of a, these are interesting things that people like to talk about. And if you want to think sort of about, you know, what can you put on your blog in from a strategic standpoint that maybe isn't details about your product, but are interesting, that people will want to come back and you can build a community around. I think that's one of the best books I've run across for building sort of content that is compelling, that really allows you to talk about things that maybe aren't, you know, top secret, but still interesting to people.
I think that's what people maybe don't get, is that if you want, like the pet food example that I used, you don't have to talk about your particular company or the brands that you sell, but you certainly can talk about care for your pet. You certainly can talk about signs of sickness and the kinds of things that we know that pet owners are interested in. So I think sometimes the business wonders what it's going to talk about on its blog, just like Eric said, and I think that you need to really think outside the box. Just like, you know, your show, Alan, where you're talking to all kinds of people that bring something different to the table. And I think you have to be open to that and understand that interests out there are very wide-ranging, and you don't have to talk just about blogs.
Right. Well, we, you know, that's a bit an interesting thing. And we have, with this platform in particular, today, again, we have about 150 shows all on different topics of, you know, from sports to blogging, social media, business, marketing, life, dating, all kinds of topics, and from all over the world, actually, these shows are happening, and people are embracing this as a way to communicate. We have, in fact, begun to speak to a lot of companies that are looking to deploy our technology in their environments to help them communicate globally. I mean, one of the things that was fascinating to me, and this is really of a social media experiment, I was contacted in December by the British Council. And the British Council, you know, we're a relatively new company, and the British Council saw a piece that was listened to one of my shows that I did with Arianna Huffington. Mm-hmm. And they invited me to speak with a group of 60 young leaders from around the world who were coming to London to attend the Greenwich Forum. And the Greenwich Forum were these 60 people, 23 to 27-year-olds, top of each country. Amazing, amazingly credentialed, well-educated individuals from Nigeria, from Saudi Arabia, from the United States, 60 countries, six of which went on to Davos to participate in the World Economic Forum with Gordon Brown and Queen Noor of Jordan. And Blog Talk Radio was invited to speak to the 60 about social media and about using this tool to help people communicate in their countries, and not just within their countries or their organizations, but around the world, where you can have people participating in panel discussions talking about health and education. And that was a fascinating thing. And businesses are beginning to looking to have these conversations. And so, you know, I hope to talk more to both of you about how these tools can be utilized within a corporate environment and setting.
Well, we're planning to continue, and we're just beginning to look at our data on colleges and universities. We're actually trying to find out who's embraced social media, how they're using it, how it's most successful, and actually we've just found out, this will be a sneak preview, Alan, we've just found out that higher ed is really using social media far more than the business world is. And it makes sense. I mean, in some ways it makes sense, but it's interesting to see that in some segments of the society, it's been adopted much quicker.
Well, you may want to consider using the Blog Talk Radio platform to actually host some of these conversations.
That would be fantastic.
You know, you could have up to six people. You could bring some of the educators on the show, and then, of course, people on our network and your blogs, these could be posted there in terms of Flash Players automatically update, just to get other people exposed. And, for example, I was very excited. On Monday night, we had Mark Freundfelder, who's the founder and creator of Boing Boing, on Blog Talk Radio. And he just wrote a book, which I'd recommend, and I do recommend, called Rule the Web. You can get it actually on my host channel, blogtalkradio.com/Alan Levy. That's where our scheduled show is for today. I have the Amazon piece up there. It's not expensive. And it's an incredible book on how to do everything on the web better, faster, and easier. And I'm just amazed that Boing Boing has 1 million RSS subscribers.
Yeah.
You know, 350,000 people a day. It's a very powerful medium if you consider that.
Yeah.
Boing Boing is a great example, and maybe this is a good last point, that Boing Boing was not an overnight sensation. Boing Boing has been around for quite a bit of time, and they got in incredibly early, and they put in a lot of time and energy to get where they are today. And I think that that's an important thing that we've heard in all of our research, is that blogging does not drive your business overnight. It's not a silver bullet. It's an important piece that many companies are finding useful, but it's not required. And that if you need to drive $1 million in sales in the next year, you know, blogging may not be the right tool for you. Social media may not be the right tool for you. But from a long-term perspective, for developing a vibrant community around your company, for making sure that people like your company, for driving word of mouth referrals, which are by far the best way to build a company, social media can be incredibly effective, but it doesn't happen overnight, and it's not a silver bullet.
Absolutely what we hear, absolutely.
Well, thank you both, Eric and Nora, for joining me today. It was a very engaging conversation. I appreciate that you joined and learning about how social media is invading the Inc. 500 and just having a conversation about social media. This podcast and archive show is available on iTunes as well. If you search in the Alan Levy Show on iTunes, you'll be able to subscribe to this and any other shows that we've done, including the one with Mark Freundfelder. And again, it's the archive, the MP3 file can be clipped at blogtalkradio.com/Alan Levy. And again, Eric, thank you. And Eric can be found at your website is what, ericmatson.com?
Yep, Eric with a C, and Matson like son of Matt.
Okay, son of Matt. And Nora, you're up in UMass at Dartmouth. I think things are probably slowed up a bit now that school's out.
They have. We're going to turn our attention to some of the new research that Eric and I have done. So hopefully this summer we'll be coming out with lots of new stuff.
Maybe we could hear some of these new things on Blog Talk Radio. It
would be
our pleasure.
That would be great. Thank you, Alan, for this opportunity.
Thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Bye.
That was a great show today, and Eric and Nora really are fascinating and have done a lot of work with social media, and it's interesting to see how the corporate world is embracing these new technologies. Obviously, the Inc. 500 is more progressive than the Fortune 500, and I would imagine that both categories and most companies are really adapting these technologies, and people getting more and more familiar with social media. And from our point, we're very excited about the ability to participate in the social media revolution that Blog Talk Radio is carving out its own special niche. So once again, thank you for joining Alan Levy. Thank you for joining my show. And until the next time, we'll see you on air. Bye-bye.